Well, I want you to open your Bibles to the Old Testament. Pray for me that I'll think where. We'll get this microphone right here. Just a minute. I think 1 Samuel chapter 21. Go there first. If it's not it, we'll find another one. All right. I get in front of these young preachers up here and I'm carrying on a little stuff I probably shouldn't. The rest of y'all don't know we're talking code sometime. Yeah, 1 Samuel 21. Let me ask you a question. You ever been in a tight spot? Of course. Everybody say yes. My tight spot might not sound bad to you and yours might not sound bad to me. But it's like puppy love. It's real to the puppy. Amen. Sometimes somebody else tells you their problem don't seem like much, but it seems like a lot to them. Right. And I'm going to read about a fellow in a tight spot here in a minute. In the news, if you're able to keep up with the news this week, we were so proud to see Pastor Bronson get home. Almost 3 years over there. I'm sure details are going to come out about a lot of stuff. We'll hear a lot of stuff later. It was a great scene to see him in the Oval Office praying with the president. Amen. That fellow's been in a tight spot. He's been in a heap of trouble. I heard him say there on the news that they had him in a cell that was built for 8 people and they had 21 in it. That he was the only Christian in the group. That means the rest of them were Muslims or whatever. That'd be quite a tight spot to be in, don't you think? Yeah. Very tight spot. And yet I believe he's going to have quite a testimony to share of the Lord taking care of him. Said he could see his wife 30 minutes a week through a glass, and that was his only outside contact. But in that meeting with her, she kept assuring him that people around the world were praying for him. And so he said that was the biggest thing that kept him going. Like I say, we'll hear a lot more about it. But he was in a tight spot. I think I've been in a few. I know you'd think you've been in a few. The man we're reading about here is King David. However, it's during a time that he's had to run from King Saul. Just like Pastor Bronson, he'd been falsely accused, being mistreated, and Saul would kill him if he could catch him. That's the situation David's in. Now, in the context of the chapter here, he's shown up at a place, and he's asked the priest for some help, for something to eat, for a weapon. And there was a spy in the group that knew about it, and later on caused even the priest to be killed that helped David. But I want you to pick it up with me in chapter 21, near the end of the chapter. Let's go down to about verse 10. Near the end, we're going to read maybe just a few verses on into chapter 22. But in verse 10, David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul and went to Achish. Achish, however you say his name, the king of Gath. Now, why was he running? It was because this spy had revealed where he was at, and it even later on cost the life of the priest that helped him. So Achish here, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said unto him, is not this David the king of the land? Did they not sing one to another of him in dances, saying, Saul hath slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? In other words, his reputation was known. And David laid up these words in his heart and was so afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. Now, picture yourself before we read any further in the spot he's in. He's gone really across the line to the enemy because the enemy at home, his own king, Saul, is even greater. And he's run over here. He's running. He's desperate. And he shows up here, and yet he's recognized. And so the men of the king are saying, hey, this is the guy that they sing about. You can't trust him. So he's in quite a spot. Now, you might ask yourself, what would you do in a spot like this? Now, David is going to do something unusual. But you'll find out later, and I may take time to go to it, you'll find out that from this event and what he does and how God delivers him is the inspiration behind Psalms 34, which is one of the most powerful personal psalms. It is to me. I like to read it and see that David wrote it in such a crisis time in his life, such a fearful time, in a time when he was in a tight spot he couldn't get out of, and he does something we consider pretty stupid, and yet God uses it to deliver him. And so when he writes the psalm, he's praising God for that victory and that deliverance. Let's read on just a little bit. It says in verse 13, and he changed his behavior before them and feigned himself mad in their hands and scrabbled on the doors of the gate and let his spittle fall down upon his beard. And Achish, then said Achish unto his servants, lo, ye see the man is mad. Wherefore then have ye brought me him to me? Have I need of a madman that ye have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard of it, they went down thither to him. And everyone that was in distress, everyone that was in debt, everyone that was discontented, gathered themselves unto him. And he became a captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men. Now, this is God's deliverance. They come down to the cave of Adullam. This is where David's mighty men, you read about David's mighty men, some of the feats they did in the Bible, and this is where he got them. And God delivered him from this. Now, you think about this thing. Why did they not kill him? He acted like the madman, like he was crazy. And I think God intervened that he didn't get killed, but there is some superstitions that could have pertained here, may not have, but a lot of heathen, for instance, the American Indians in America, when anybody ever read about Custer's Last Stand, and I've been out there and seen the plains where it took place, and they say nobody lived through that, but one man did, one man. Escaped. And here's why he escaped. Because as the battle began, and by the way, do not be deceived, the Indians were pretty well armed. In fact, in some cases, they had repeating rifles. You go out there in Montana and find and look at the spot, look at the history, you find out a few things you don't find out otherwise. But anyway, in the early part of the battle, this particular soldier on his horse, a bullet hit his rifle. It hit his rifle where the stock joined the metal, and a splinter shot off of the stock and pierced him somewhere in his eye or head or somewhere. It didn't kill him, but it threw him into like a coma or a trance, and yet he stayed on his horse. But it was obvious that he was out of it. And while the Indians had the upper hand and finally destroyed all Custer's army, they let this one man on a horse that just kept walking. He just kept walking and he kept walking. And he walked all the way through the Indians' force and ultimately lived. Why'd they let him through there? They had a superstition that superstition was that when God done something like that, and if somebody was an imbecile or crazy, they wouldn't kill them. And what David, the trick David pulled here, has been pulled a number of times with people that had that superstition. So there was one man that did get out of Custer's fight alive. He actually lived. Of course, he was hurt bad, and I don't remember all the details about it, but that's written up. David pulled a trick here that may have played, I don't know, on their superstition that if God has already struck somebody and already done something to somebody, leave him alone. Now, I don't know if that was the reason. I do know God delivered him because he was in a pickle. He was in a spot. He didn't have any hope. He had been recognized. He thought maybe he could slip in among the enemies of Israel and not be recognized, but no. They recognized him and even knew the little song that had been made up about him, about comparing him to Saul. And so when you come to this thing here, you see God delivered. Now, David knew who delivered him, and that's why he wrote the 34th Psalm at about this time. Now, I don't know. You say, did David carry pencil and paper with him? I don't know how it happened, but it was written around the time that he was in a pickle here, that he was in a tight spot, and God had delivered him, and all these 400 men had gathered to him, and all of a sudden, David now becomes a force to be reckoned with because God has taken him from the impossible, and he's going to make him king over Israel, just like the old prophet had said he would in the early years when he was just a shepherd boy. And he went to his house and picked him of all his brethren. Now, I don't know. I think I've seen some times. I'm sure you and I could tell some stories. If you read my blue book back there, there's several stories in there where you see God showing up. There's no other way you can explain it. I think of tight places I've been in. I think about when Brother Billings and I, Bob Billings and I, were over in Russia trying to deliver the Bibles and got trapped at the Moscow airport, and it looked like we were going to jail. I didn't get too scared until I saw my Russian companions getting so scared. Then I realized what a pickle we were in. I was in a tight spot that night, and I've told the story in detail, so I won't say much about it, except to say to get caught in there without a visa, all the Russians had said, if they ask for your visa and you don't have it, you're going to jail. Well, I didn't have it. And they did ask for it. And they just asked me, I believe it was, to see my papers. And I had a visa to St. Petersburg in my coat pocket, along with my passport. But I didn't have a visa to Moscow. And so those Russian ladies had told us at the hotel, you get caught in Moscow without your visa, you're going right to jail. And then one of them made the statement, and it'll take a long time for folks to ever find out where you're at. That was a scary statement. But anyway, when the guard asked me for it, had his gun, we couldn't understand. You've heard me tell the story about couldn't communicate. And when I reached in there, my visa to St. Petersburg was inside my passport. I couldn't pull the passport out and take the visa out in front of the guard. I had to reach in and pull some magic. I had to separate that visa from that passport, all in this pocket, with one hand before it came out, and he's standing there looking at me. I think God got in that, because I did it. And then when I pulled it out, just showed him my passport, he didn't ask for my Moscow visa. I don't know why he didn't. Later on, the interpreter, Vera, didn't know why he didn't either. I know God just got in there and got me out of a tight spot. That's what happened here with David. We can tell stories like that. Brother Randy Smith's back there. I'm sure he'll remember one time years back when we had got in a big fuss over trying to drop an insurance company that was doing us wrong and church-wise, and they told us we couldn't drop them. Now, I've always had a feeling that, you know, if you hire somebody, you ought to be able to fire them. And as far as I was concerned, we'd hired that insurance company. They didn't own us. We were paying them premiums. And Brother Smith may remember, I said, well, you said we can't drop you. Just notice that you're not getting paid every month. And it got pretty hot through some exchange of letters and so on. But finally, we got notified they were going to sue us. And Brother Smith and I got in the car together and rode over to Lakeland one morning for to the courthouse. And I didn't tell the church much about it publicly. We didn't know how the thing was going to develop. But we went over there, and big, nice, rich-looking courthouse there in Lakeland. When you go inside of it, all the mahogany wood and all that stuff. I don't know how he felt, but I felt a little bit out of place. I felt like I'm maybe entering the enemy's territory here. I was not comfortable at all and didn't know how the thing was going to turn out or what was going to happen. But we went in there, and he'll remember, as we walked up to the counter, I'm talking about a wealthy-looking place in there. And there was one lady behind the counter. I was kind of feeling like we were in a tight spot. We walked up there. And we had directions as to which floor to go to, but we didn't know our way around, so we walked up there to her to get a little information. And as we did, I was telling her what judge, what chamber, whatever information we had, and she was looking at me real intent, just hard. I thought, oh, what's going on here? And she says, I know you. I hear you on the radio all the time. I want to tell you something. I got relaxed. I thought, if the Lord can get me one friend in this place, and she was happy to meet me as the preacher on the radio she'd been listening to. I want to tell you, and Brother Smith would tell you, things went well after that. We went on up and sat across the big table. There was a judge there, and our lawyer met us, and they had flown in two lawyers, a man and woman, all the way from, was it Colorado? I believe it was Colorado, Brother Smith. And they'd flown early flight that morning to get there. So the judge let the insurance lawyer start off. And the woman didn't say much, but the man spoke up, and he told Hal that if we dropped them, how much money they were going to lose. And he was sounding pretty tough at us. And he finally said this as he concluded his speech and pointed at me and said, he don't have an answer to any of that. And the judge was an old country boy. And he looked over at me and he said, we'll see if he's got an answer or not. Remember that, Brother Smith? And I did have an answer. In fact, quite a long answer. I had taken just my pen and some notebook sheets of paper, and I'd done something a country boy would do. I had just written out all the premiums we'd paid for 2 years or whatever it was, and I had found out how many claims they had paid. They had made a lot of money off of us, and I had it tallied. He had some computer printouts that he was trying to refer to, but what are they compared to good old country writing on a blue horse notebook paper? Amen. And the judge glanced at his and looked at mine, and he turned back to that lawyer and he said, I thought you said he didn't have an answer. Then the lawyer was the one bum-fuzzled. You know what that is? That's Greek for being confused. You understand that? Bum-fuzzled. And then the lawyer looked at him. He said, well, I don't want to get in an argument with a country boy. No, a country preacher. I don't want to get in an argument with a country preacher. I thought, that's a compliment as far as I'm concerned. Well, how he meant it. But anyway, can't take the time for the whole detail, but we won. We come out of there all right. And I want to tell you, God's been so many times like that. Just so many times. That little blue book records quite a few of them. I want to get over the psalm, but I'm having a hard time stopping telling about tight places. Amen. Because one bumps me right into another one, you know. You ever been in one? You see, sometimes you don't see God's deliverance until you get out of it. And then you look back, and then hindsight says, God got me out of that. I couldn't have planned it. There's no way I could have made that work and made it happen, but the Lord did. I'm sure we could have testimonies all night of that. It just have to be. How many of you remember when we had the buildings are still down there, when we did the nursing home down here on 10th Street? Raise your hand if you got it. That was fun, wasn't it? Now, I see Brother Conlon's hand, Brother Pitts, still dream about it, don't you? It was a mess. We took that place and remodeled it and run a nursing home. We had a number of our church members in it there. Sister Rose Everett's headed up for me. And that little story's in the blue book, I think, back there. And we were doing all right. Of course, we were not doing all right financially. We was going in the hole of averaging about $1,000 a month going in the red on it because we were compassionate. We were generous. And I'd have people come to me, grandma, mama, daddy, whatever, and couldn't pay. And so we'd put them in there and take care of them. So naturally, we're not making any money on it at all. And but we were doing a good ministry. We won some souls and some good stuff was happening. And at that time, it was legal in the state of Florida to do just what we were doing and be exempt from the government rules. I don't know how you got me off on this, but I got to finish it. Anyway, then all of a sudden, I read in the paper and then I check it up, and some of these bureaucrats in Tallahassee had rewritten the rules and got it passed to where now the church could not run it exempt from the state law, but we had to have a state license. Well, I'm not going to run anything that has to have a state license and go by their rules. I was not going to do that. So I knew I was in a spot. It had already happened. I couldn't change it. What was I going to do? And one of the things I was concerned about was I knew I had a lot of folks in there that had nowhere else to go. And if they got kicked out, if we closed down, I was in a real dilemma and pondering what to do. And about that time, you know, things seem to pile on when you get in a spot. About that time, I had a kidney stone. Anybody know what that is? That's God's revenge on a man for not being able to feel the pain of childbirth. I'm joking a little bit, but most men would pretty much agree with me. It's a terrible pain. It's an awful thing. And I was in the little hospital, which was in the middle of town there. And of course, they dope you up to try to help you stand the pain. And it's just a struggle there for a while. And I think it was about second or third day. And I'd finally begin to get a little bit of relief, but I'd really been hurting. And at the same time, I'm still pondering, what am I going to do about the nursing home? What am I going to do about this thing? The state inspectors are going to be out, and I'm going to, what am I going to do about this? And I just, on top of the kidney stone, that thing was really pestering me. What am I going to do? Got to do something. And I'm laying there in the bed, looking really beautiful, laying in the hospital bed, been wrestling with pain and pills for 3 days. And time you wouldn't want your picture made. Anybody ever seen one of them hospital gowns? You sure want it made from the front if you get a picture. Some of you been there, you're laughing, I can tell. But with all that said, I'm laying in the bed, and a man I have never seen before walks in the door, and pretty well dressed. And he said, do you own the nursing home down there? Now I thought, what else? Here they're already here, and they won't even let me get over a kidney stone before they're after me, you know? And I basically said, who wants to know or what, whatever. Yeah, I guess I do own it, so on. I said, we don't own the buildings, we own the home and we rent the buildings. He said, well, I already know that. I done research on it. I thought, sure, he's from the government. But he wasn't. He was a Catholic man that he and his wife had moved down. She had run a nursing home up north, and they were looking for one to buy. So he said to me, I'd like to buy the home. I said, well, I'd like to sell, but I'm not going to sell to anybody that kicks some of my folks out that aren't paying. And I got a bunch of them in there that's not paying. He said, I can take care of that. I said, well, I want you to know the state changed the rules now. They got some strict thing you got to go through to get licensed. And he said, I know we were licensed up north. He said, I can deal with that. Make a long story short, we were able to sell out and get exactly enough out to pay for the equipment we'd put in. We didn't make a profit, but bless God, we got out. And he signed a paper that he would not kick any of my folks out. He let them stay. That was a big part of the deal. Now, I felt like I was in a tight spot and God showed up. Now, he was a Catholic guy. I was able to witness to him, and every holiday, everything special, Easter, Christmas, he'd call me on the phone and say, come down here and preach to these people. And so I would. I'd go down there and I'd hold services. I'm going to tell you, I've been in a few tight spots. And that might not sound like too much to you, but if you were responsible for all I was responsible for at that time and to look out for the church and all that, it sure seemed like a tight spot to me. I didn't really intend to get on all these tight spots, but there's a bunch of them. I'll never remember them all probably any time, and certainly not tonight. Any of you remember the camp fight we had, the third camp we ever had? You remember that? That was a tight spot. Boy, was that ever a tight spot. They were going to come out and bus our kids in from the camp. Anybody trying to look around? Brother Pitts. I know Brother Pitts was there. Brother Condon, maybe. Who else? Oh, yeah, Brother Marvin, for sure. Y'all know what I'm talking about. We had quite a time, didn't we? They came out harassing us. Unexpected. I don't know where I want to jump in at. Too much of it. I came out one afternoon about like on a Monday or Tuesday, and we were having the camp, and I saw some county trucks out there. And as I'd been to a funeral, I'd actually left the funeral home, heading home 7 miles to change clothes out of the suit for the funeral and go back to camp. I got right down on 544 just a ways, and I didn't hear God's voice, but I felt his presence. My hair on the back of my neck went up, my face flushed. And the message was as clear as if somebody had been sitting in the seat side of me, said, trouble at camp, get to camp, get to camp. And I whirled that car around in the road, and I took off and set a new speed record from there to the camp. And when I went in there, I saw a crowd of people in a circle, and I saw the county trucks there, and saw a man and a woman that I knew was probably from them. As I walked into that circle, I heard this guy saying this. He said something about the kids and one of our, and this was a family camp. It's a little different than what we had now. The families were out there with the kids. And we just was having that one first year camp. And as I walked up, I heard one of our daddies say, that boy out here belongs to my wife and I. We feed him, we take care of him, we raised him, and he's out here with our permission, and we're out here, and he don't belong to the state, he belongs to us. And that smart aleck fellow said, we got more authority over your kids than you have. That's what he said. He said, will come out here with the buses and we'll bus these kids in, make them wards of the state, and charge this church with child abuse. Marvin, I don't know if you were in the circle, but that's what he said. And I'm walking up here in this. And folks, I'm still a little bit of this persuasion, but at that age, I was very much. I was very skeptical to righteous indignation attacks. And I had a bad one. And I walked into the middle of the circle, and he looked at me. I said to him, I said, "Do you have a warrant for me or anybody at this camp?" "Well, no." I said, "Then get out of here." And he kind of moved toward, he said, "Let me show you what's wrong with this restroom over here." I said, "No, I told you to get out of here." He said, "Or what are you going to do?" I said, "We are going to throw you over the fence." And that's the words I used. When I said that, some of my biggest men just growl like that. Literally. That got his attention more than what I was saying. And then I got him by the arm and marched him, and the lady followed. She didn't say nothing. I marched him to that pickup truck and got him in the pickup truck. There was another man waiting in the pickup truck. He hadn't got out, but these two. They got in the truck, and I got that old black Ford of mine and pulled it right around behind that truck. And every time they'd slow up, I'd almost hit them. All the way out. And the road was rough then. It's nice now. It was rough then. All the way out to the pavement. I put them out there. Well, I knew I'd put my hands on him. I knew I was probably in trouble. He told me, "You're going to jail. You're going to jail. We're coming back out here. We're going to get these kids." He kept talking that way. And so he went to the payphone. I guess they didn't even have cell phones. Government didn't then, I reckon. None of us did. And so we did that. And he went across to the payphone across the street. And I come on up to my office, and I called a lawyer I knew. I told him the truth. I said, "I guess I'm going to jail tonight. I said, I want you to help me out if you can." I said, I put my hands on the guy. I didn't hurt him, but I said, I kind of firmly led him to his truck. You know what that lousy lawyer said. "Well, when you get in jail, give me a call." He said, "They'll give you a ticket down at Bartow. You hold on to the ticket. When I get down..." I wanted him to tell me how I didn't have to go to jail. Oh, I got way in this story and didn't intend to. I'm going to have to skip the psalm, and that was the best part. David wrote it when he was in a tight. And I mean in a real tight. God delivered him. God delivered me that night for sure. I jumped the car and went back out there, and the biggest, ugliest thundercloud you'd ever seen come up that night. Just as I got back to the gate, a deputy was sitting out there. See, we didn't have cell phones, but they used to have things called CB radios. And it worked just about as good. And all the people from Haines City that had kids out there had gathered out there at the gate. I mean, a big crowd. And them old redneck boys that had the guns over their seat of the pickups, you ever seen that? And when I pulled up, I jumped out of the car and I said, "What's happening?" And one of the guys that knew me said, "You tell us. We got word uptown they were coming after our kids tonight." I said, "Well, they're probably bluffing." He said, "Well, they ain't getting our kids." I could imagine they wouldn't. That old cloud come up, was about to rain, and I said, "Well, you know, here's a crowd." So I invited them all down to the tabernacle. And they came down, many of them, and it rained bad and hard. But a lot of them heard the gospel that night. They wouldn't have heard it otherwise in the tabernacle service. I still didn't know if they were going to come or not. So we finally got everybody off to bed about midnight. And I got in the tabernacle, in the mess hall. And I didn't pull off my clothes. I got me something under my head, and I lay flat out on one of the eating tables. We didn't have the benches we got out there now. We had just folding tables. I got in such a way that I could see the light coming in if anybody came in from the roadway. And I'll admit I didn't hardly sleep any, just catting up a little bit. The rain stopped, and I guess I dozed off. About 4:30 in the morning, I heard screaming like you would not believe. And here's what had happened. See, the cooks used to come in and sleep uptown and then come back early in the morning to start breakfast. And they have to come in with flashlights because we didn't have any electricity. We had to crank up a generator to have electricity. Remember that, don't you, Brother Marvin? And when they walked in and opened that screen door and shined the light, I'm laying flat out on the table. And they think I'm dead. They start screaming and hollering. Sure messed up my morning nap, I'll tell you. No, they didn't come out. We were in a tight spot. And I'm going to bring it to a conclusion. I'm shortcutting it. But God got in it. And we didn't know it. But we had the governor of the state of Florida. We had his granddaughter at camp. She got in touch with her mother. Her mother got in touch with the governor. We didn't know this was going on. The governor sent some authorities down to rebuke the people that was messing with us. It was a beautiful scene. He called them all on the carpet in Lakeland. I got to preach to them for close to an hour, truthfully. And I remember what his representative said to him. He said, if you folks got nothing better to do than mess with a church that's doing a good job, I'm going back to Tallahassee and cut your budget. You got too much money. That got their attention, brother. That got their attention. And we haven't had that since. How many years has that been? Over around 40? Been a while. God got us out of some spots. We hadn't done anything wrong. We just had some overzealous, uneducated, ignorant bureaucrats throwing their authority around. Now, there may be some good ones. I know they are. But some of them let their authority go to their head. And I'll never forget in that meeting that the governor called, that guy that was going to take our kids, the one I got by the arm, and walked to the bus, to his truck. In the meeting, I said to the governor's representative what the man said to me about gonna bus our kids in. What I said to him while I had him by the arm, I asked him a question. I said, if you can come out here to our youth camp and pick up our kids, what would keep you from coming on Sunday morning to our Sunday school and picking up our kids? He said, well, I guess we could. And I said this to him, don't try it. It'll be detrimental to your health. And that's the word I used, detrimental to your health. You know, he might have caught a cold or something. He'd have caught something all right. It wouldn't have been a cold. But anyway, this guy used that against me then. Well, the preacher said if I were to come, he'd be detrimental to my health. And that representative from Tallahassee looked at him. He said, if you show up at my house after my kids, it'll be detrimental to your health too. He nailed him, boy. I mean, God got in that. You can't explain that no other way. David here wrote the psalm praising God because God had just delivered him and caused him to fall for a trick where he feigned himself to be mad, slobbering on himself and acting mad. And he got away. And not only did he get away, he gets to this cave and all of a sudden all the neighborhood, sort of like the folks that came out at the camp gate, they rallied to him. And that has to be God. Now, I'm sure when David was writing the psalm, he was looking back, thinking about what God had done for him. And I'm telling the story right here to you, that story, and there's many others, and you could tell me yours. Just remember, sometimes you say, boy, I was smart. I feigned myself mad. No, David didn't say that. David said, God did it. God did it. And I'm saying to you, I wasn't smart. In fact, I probably brought some of it on myself from the talk I had with that guy. But God did it. What a tight spot you might be in tonight. It may be a health thing. Like this preacher Brunson that we're so glad got released over there. I heard him say the other night on TV, he said, I did think at first God had forsaken me. Done nothing wrong, put in jail just suddenly like that. He said, for a while, I did think maybe God's forsaken me. He said, then the Lord showed me that the suffering you're going through is a purpose, and I got a use for it. And so when you look back sometimes, God didn't forsake. He was more real at that time than any other time. But sometimes it takes hindsight to look back and see it. Whatever you might be into tonight, just don't count God out of it. It may be pain. It may be heartbreak. It may be financial. It may be a lot of things. But there's nothing too hard for God. Don't count him out. He may have a purpose in it, right? What does Romans 8:28 say? All things work together for good to them that love God, to them that are called according to his purpose. It's still in the book, and it's still real. All right, let's stand. Father, we pray you'd bless the choir now as they pray.